This is the TSN MMA Show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Welcome to the TSN MMA Show. Two heavyweights on the show today. We've got Arjun Buller, Canadian, the best Canadian heavyweight in the world today, fighting at UFC Fight Night in Moncton. And, of course, we've got the newest addition to the heavyweight division, who I'm not really sure how many people are going to be signing up to fight, but he does have a fight at the end of the year on December 15th in Milwaukee. That's Juan Adams, the Kraken. He'll be taking on Chris De La Roca later this year. Kudos to Chris for signing that contract, because Juan Adams is a scary, scary man. A guy who cuts to 265, wrestling background, 6'8", a giant of a man. But before we get to the heavyweights, I want to talk about a super lightweight, very, very lightweight individual who's come into my life recently. So a bit of a personal note here. My wife and I were expecting a child on December the 1st, a girl. And she decided to come into our life a little bit early. So she came on October the 23rd, is now a big part of our life. Her name is Nessa May, weighing in at 3 pounds and 11 ounces. What was it, 12 ounces? 11 or 12 ounces. Very small, either way. She's in the NICU right now. So, my wife and I have been visiting her every day, and our boys are doing well. They came and visited her as well. Family's been stopping by. And pleased to say that she's been doing really, really well. So I'm very excited that she's now a part of our family, and hopefully we can bring her home soon. So thanks to those who sent me a note on Twitter. I really appreciate that. I posted a picture and said that she did come a little bit early. So I do really appreciate the well wishes. And if you don't follow me on Twitter, you're listening to this. That's a bit of a personal update for yours truly. So again, hopefully she's home in 2 weeks. So, I was supposed to go to Moncton this week and cover UFC Fight Night in Moncton, New York next week for UFC 230. But unfortunately, fortunately, the baby's here. Unfortunately, I can't cover those events. But very fortunately, we've got a healthy baby right now, and she's doing really well. So very happy about that. Let's get on to the reason that you're listening to the show, the TSN MMA show, because we've got a big trade to discuss in the mixed martial arts world. Never thought I'd say that. Huge trade, blockbuster trade in the world of mixed martial arts. Who would have ever thought that you'd hear those words coming out of someone's mouth? But the UFC and ONE FC, are reportedly close to an agreement that would allow Ben Askren to sign with the UFC and have Demetrius Johnson sign with ONE FC or ONE Championship. I keep making that mistake. I can't get used to that. ONE Championship. Of course, Matt Hume, Demetrius Johnson's trainer, I believe is a VP at ONE Championship. While Ben Askren is a, undefeated, elite fighter, 170-pounder, had retired, said he would only come back for a big fight, but I guess he's got the hunger. He's still pretty young. He still has a lot of fight life in him. Hasn't taken much damage throughout his career. Made a lot of money in ONE Championship, but he's decided that, people have always said, how would he do on a high level? How would he do against UFC fighters? And he said he was never really concerned with that kind of talk. But regardless of that, he will be testing himself against fighters in the octagon, and he's already taking names, calling everybody out on Twitter, calling out Jorge Masvidal, responding to Jorge Masvidal, responding to Mike Perry, responding to Alan Jobin. So he's already back to being Ben Askren. I posted the other day on Twitter who I thought the best matchups would be for him, names like GSP, Khabib, Kamaru Usman, Stephen Thompson, Nate Diaz, or rather Nick Diaz, all big names that I think Ben Askren would need for his first fight in the UFC. People asked, what about Colby Covington? And I said, Colby's got a date with Tyron. He's not really the interim champion anymore, but if you go to the UFC's ranking page, it says he is. So that's what he's got on his plate right now. He's got a date with Tyron Woodley, with the champ. So until that's over, Ben Askren is going to have to wait. And then, of course, people wonder why he won't fight the champion, why Tyron Woodley's not at play. I mean, Ben Askren, clearly an elite fighter, could get an immediate title shot, but the circumstances aren't right here because him and Tyron Woodley are good friends. They've said they're not going to fight one another. They train together. at Rufus Sport. So that's out of the question. So what does Askren do? Where does he go from here? He's called out Khabib on Twitter already. I love that matchup. I mean, for him, if GSP was on the table, that's the fight to make. And I think if you're the UFC, that's the fight to make. I don't know how much GSP would want to take that fight. He talks about legacy. But, you know, the UFC, and I wrote this on Twitter as well, they have an obligation right now. Because people who are reading this that are casual fans are thinking they traded a guy that a lot of people thought was the pound-for-pound best mixed martial artist maybe ever in Demetrius Johnson. They're letting him sign with one championship so they can bring this guy on. Why? Why are you bringing Ben Askren on? That's the information that every fan covets right now. If they don't know who Ben Askren is, if they're not familiar with the fact that he's an NCAA champion, a high level wrestler, they need to find out why Ben Askren's a big deal. Why is he coming to the UFC, and why is him joining the UFC a big deal? If you look at what his body of work is, he's undefeated, but you know he's beaten Andre Koroshkov. Big win, Douglas Lima and Bellator. Lots of good wins, but they were a long time ago. Who has he beaten recently? People are going to ask these questions. But you need to bring Ben Askren in and make him a big deal from the jump. As a promotion, I think that's their obligation. Now, whether or not they do that, that's up to them. But if I'm promoting for the UFC, my first order of business with Ben Askren is let people know who this guy is, why they should care, and why he's a big deal. Because Ben Askren's barely gotten hit in his career, let alone lost. I mean, he's like Khabib. He's barely lost rounds, let alone fights. So if you can let people know that this is a big deal, you know, maybe make promotional videos about just him, about the fact that he's joined the UFC and why it matters, who he is. It's almost like wrestling. You know, in pro wrestling, they sign, you know, Shane Douglas or whatever. The WWE brings on Shane Douglas, and Shane Douglas is a big deal in NWA. But people who just watched the WWF back then didn't know who he was. So you've got these promotional videos where he's Dean Douglas and he's introducing his character. Now, of course, these aren't characters really, but they sort of are. To an extent, Ben Askren is a character. So what they've got to do now is show the world that Ben Askren is a guy who can be considered the top contender at welterweight, or even lightweight if he decides to go down to lightweight. I mean, if he's mentioning Khabib, maybe that's an option for him. He's never been the biggest welterweight. But you've got to make it clear that this is a guy that's important. This is a guy that's worth watching. This is a guy that is perhaps the best grappler in all of MMA, alongside the likes of Khabib. This is an elite athlete, an elite MMA fighter, an undefeated fighter. The UFC has to explain to people why he matters. Because if you see a headlining event where it's Askren versus blank, you're not going to care if you don't know who he is. You're not going to know who he is. You're going to say, who's Askren? Never heard of this guy before. Again, I hate to continue to make wrestling comparisons, but I remember as a kid, I'd get those wrestling magazines that have rankings, the worldwide rankings. You'd be like, who's this guy, the Great Muta, number one wrestler in the world? Who's this guy, Jeff Jarrett? Never heard of this guy. I just watch the WWF every week, and I watch Canadian wrestling. People don't always know who these elite-level fighters are that are outside of the UFC. They just don't. Now, I think that their hardcore demographic, most of them will know who Ben Askren is and why it's a big deal. But I think that it's on the UFC to get this guy some recognition and explain why he's important. Now, as for Demetrius Johnson, the flip side of this, from covering UFC 228 in Los Angeles, it was quite clear that Demetrius Johnson didn't have a whole lot of interest in his obligations outside the octagon. He didn't care much about the promotional aspect of the sport. He didn't think he was being promoted well. I'm not of that opinion. I think that he headlined pay-per-views, he headlined Fox cards, they gave him a ton of exposure. But as I've said before on this show, it takes a certain something for people to care about fighters. Most fighters in the UFC draw 200,000 to 300,000 pay-per-views. Most of the headliners. It's the Connors of the world, the Rondas of the world, the Brock Lesnars of the world. They're few and far between. There are not a lot of those type of fighters. Tyron Woodley doesn't draw 400,000, 500,000 as a headliner. He just doesn't. So Demetrius Johnson wasn't being underpromoted. They were promoting him fine. And then you look at the flyweight division, and people just don't really care much about it. A lot of people are saying it should be dissolved. A lot of people saying it will be dissolved. Now, I think that would be a shame. I think that there's a lot of fighters that are at their optimal body size at 125 pounds that will be at a disadvantage at 135 pounds. But at the same time, it's not my promotion that I'm running. There's never been any sort of evidence that people care at all about the flyweights in terms of ratings, in terms of pay-per-view buys. Flyweight fights, even top contender fights, are towards the bottom of the card a lot of the time. But what's Demetrius Johnson going to do in one championship? That's the big question I have. And I wrote this earlier as well, that if you look at the biggest names in one championship, Bibiano Fernandez, to me, in the lighter weight classes, is by far the biggest name. If you look at 125, 135. But Demetrius and Bibiano will never fight. They're training partners. They're good friends. So you look at it. I don't know who the 125-pound champion, if you pulled me aside and said, Aaron, I know you cover this sport, who's the 125 champion of one championship? I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. I looked him up earlier, and I don't even remember his name. It's no disrespect to ONE Championship. They're huge in Asia, but they only have a certain handful of name-recognized fighters. You've got your Angela Lee. You've got Bibiano. You've got Wynn. You've, of course, had Ben Askren, who was your champion. You have Brandon Vera, who had a long stint in the UFC, their heavyweight champion. So you think about it and you think, who am I going to watch one championship for? Shinya Aoki, another great fighter. Now they've signed Eddie Alvarez, of course, a household name. And I had alluded on Twitter to the fact that I had been hearing somebody else was going to be joining one championship outside of Alvarez. Couldn't really say anything because I didn't have anything concrete just yet. I hadn't had anything confirmed. But I'd been hearing rumblings that Demetrius Johnson might be on the move. Now he is. Not official yet, but getting there, from what Ariel Helwani from ESPN has been reporting. So when Demetrius Johnson goes to one championship, I think he himself is an attraction, but find me a guy at flyweight in one championship that's not going to be a massive underdog against him. I mean, you're talking 30-1 favorite for Demetrius Johnson in almost every circumstance with the current fighters that they have under contract. Now, of course, if the UFC dissolves flyweight and says, we're going to release a bunch of these guys, grant them their unconditional release, they can sign elsewhere. Maybe ONE Championship picks some of those guys up. But the problem with that is we've seen Demetrius Johnson defeat in tremendous fashion most of the guys in the flyweight division. So, I don't know who they're going to put up against Demetrius Johnson where people aren't going to think it's just going to be pretty much an unfair fight. 20-1, 30-1 favorite. Because I just don't see anybody beating Demetrius Johnson. I barely saw anybody beating him inside the UFC than outside of the UFC. It took him getting injured to lose to Henry Cejudo, who was a gold medalist in the Olympics. Demetrius Johnson is still one of the pound-for-pound best in the world. One of the most creative, diverse, well-rounded fighters that you'll see in the world today. So, if you put him against anybody on ONE Championship's roster outside of Bibiano, I don't think people are A, going to recognize who he's fighting if you're a very casual fan or somebody who follows mostly the UFC and Bellator and, you know, maybe the PFL every now and then. So what can you do with Demetrius Johnson that's going to make him anything special there, that's going to be able to continue to elevate his profile? Or maybe they don't care. Maybe they know they're going to get views when Demetrius fights. Demetrius is going to, you know, he'll be fighting on YouTube, on wherever, you know, ONE Championship has the ONE Championship app. He'll be fighting on that worldwide for free. So maybe that's all they care about. Maybe they just want him. I mean, Ben Askren clearly didn't have any interest in continuing to fight for the organization. I think he has a stake in the organization. He's been retweeting Chaudhry, their president. He's been retweeting Demetrius Johnson. He clearly still has a stake in ONE Championship doing well. So Is that the end game for them? Is it just to have showcase fights for Demetrius Johnson and make him the champion? And then what? It's interesting because Demetrius Johnson and his scrum after his open workout at UFC 228 said, wouldn't it be cool if I could just leave the UFC and fight in ONE Championship and fight in Bellator and fight in all these organizations and become their champion? It's like, okay, that is cool. I mean, you walk away as a champion of lots of different organizations, but how many of them have established flyweight divisions? few and far between. Does he want to move back to bantamweight? He didn't in the UFC. He wouldn't want to take the super fight with TJ Dillashaw that everybody had been talking about for years. People are going to say, oh, what do you mean years? Back in Montreal when they both headlined the card. Was it Montreal? Or I think it was Montreal. They were the two headliners, but Dillashaw's fight fell off. But I remember them sitting next to each other because I was producing the show. It was Off the Record with Michael Landsberg. And they were sitting next to each other, and Landsberg said, what are you guys going to fight each other? Dillashaw had just become the champion at bantamweight before losing it to Cruz and ultimately winning it back. Johnson, obviously the king of flyweight since his inception up until recently. They said, well, we'd consider it, but give us the right amount of money. Demetrius was never offered that money. So that fight never happened. And it was a big one. So that's where we're at. That's the trade. And I think it's interesting. I think it's a very, very interesting turn of events and really unprecedented in terms of mixed martial arts. So it was really cool to see that story when it broke this week because I think it opens a lot of doors for the future. So that's what we've got on the trade. And it's certainly, again, a pretty interesting precedent because who knows what happens with the UFC if they want to trade with other organizations. I don't know if it's so much a trade per se as it is kind of a mutual agreement to part ways with their respective stars so that they can sign with those organizations, something that they would have to work out in advance with the fighters. But the interesting thing about it from the perspective of Demetrius Johnson is, well, you know, who's he going to fight? Like their champion at one is a guy from the Philippines who's 9, I think he's 3-2 in his last 5, has one finish in his 12 appearances in one championship, and that doesn't necessarily mean he's not a good fighter. I mean, not every fighter needs to get a finish, but I mean, people are going to download the app to see Demetrius Johnson for sure, but he's just going to blow these guys out of the water. That's what my fear is, that it's just not going to be any competition for him that's any good. UFC Fight Night in Moncton this week. At the brand new Avenir Center. Tickets still available if you want to go, if you're in Moncton. A solid card. I mean, from top to bottom, there are a lot of fights that are pretty close. I mean, the biggest favorite is Nasrat Haqparast. He's nearly a 10-1 favorite. But outside of that, I think there's a lot to like about this card. Not necessarily the biggest names, but some very competitive fights. So, starting at the very top of the card, you got Stevie Ray versus Justin Ayari. You know, Stevie Ray, I think, is really underrated in this spot. I mean, he's a minus 150 favorite against a guy in Ayari who has not looked great in the UFC. He's looked okay. He's definitely a durable guy. But I think this is going to be an interesting step up in competition for him. You know, even from a guy like Darren Till. He's moving down to 155, a division that's definitely better suited to him. If you remember seeing him against Till, what the size advantage was for Darren Till, it was pretty massive. But about a year and a half layoff for Ayari. And I'm very surprised that this line has kind of come down because I think Stevie Ray is a guy who, you know, coming into the UFC had a ton of hype. He was a big favorite in almost all of his fights. But then he started to get matched up against better competition. You know, like Cajun Johnson's a solid fighter for sure. But then you look at Paul Felder, Joe Lauzon, Ross Pearson. Like, these are some bigger names. And as a result of that, some of his momentum started to go away, but I think that he's going to get it back against Justin Ayari. I just think it's a very favorable matchup for him. Arjun Buller, coming off his first career loss as a professional mixed martial artist, rather. He joins us later on in the show. He faces Marcelo Golm. Now, if you watch the fight against Timothy Johnson, the last fight that Marcelo Golm had, you see that he had really nothing to offer against the takedown. He was able to stuff a couple, but when it came to the takedown, Timothy Johnson was able to just kind of impose his will on Golm. Now, Golm's a good young fighter. He's got a solid background. But his only win is against Christian Colombo, who I think is at the very bottom rung of heavyweights in the UFC. No disrespect to the man. I mean, anybody who gets into the cage certainly has to have a degree of talent. But I think that, you know, this is a big step. This is the best opponent that Marcelo Golm will ever face. Has faced to date. I don't know if he'll face better competition, especially if he gets a win, but Buller is going to, be able to take him down at will. If Timothy Johnson's able to, you're talking about a Pan Am champion here in Arjun Buller, who I think will be able to utilize his wrestling against Gholm and really get the upper hand. You know, Gholm's a young guy. It'll be interesting to see how much he's improved from fight to fight. But when you saw what happened against Timothy Johnson, Johnson was just kind of smothering him and was able to get the win. T. Edwards, big debut. He was on the show last week, actually. He's a guy that all of his wins come in the first round. Just a powerhouse. And he's against a guy named Don Madge, a guy who had a lot of success, was a champion at the EFC in South Africa, the biggest promotion out there. But there's just not a whole lot of great competition out in South Africa. So anybody really who he faces in the UFC is going to be a step up. And T. Edwards, obviously is a 5-1 favorite here, is a big step up for Don Madge. Now, Madge is a resilient guy, a versatile guy. But when you see what T. Edwards has been able to do with first-round finishes, what he did on the Contender Series, guy's a wrecking machine. So I don't think that T. Edwards has any trouble with Don Madge. Sarah Morris against Toledo Bernardo. Bernardo's, you know, solid with BJJ, but Morris is also incredibly creative on the ground. I think Morris is going to have an advantage on the feet. In terms of on the ground, I know Bernardo's a black belt, but Sarah Morris, you know, like I said, very, very crafty. And when you see, you know, a line of her, you know, this plus, you know, 8-1 pretty much to get a submission, it's always worth a stab with Sarah Morris because she's so good off her back and also really good off top. So I think Morris has more ways to win this fight. But if she tries to get a little bit too creative on the ground, you never know what Bernardo is going to be able to do because Bernardo is very skilled in that facet of the game. You know, she fought Irene Aldana last time and Aldana was kind of able to take her down and dominate that fight. But, you know, Aldana, I think, is a really, really tough fighter. We saw what she did against Lucy Pudilova, one of the best fights of the year in terms of female MMA. So, you know, I think that Morris has a pretty marked advantage on the feet. And then on the ground, again, I think Morris is very crafty. So if it does get there, I don't think that Bernardo is going to be able to do much to put Morris in trouble. So we'll see how that goes. Chris Fishgold making his UFC debut, obviously a Cage Warriors veteran who's fought some pretty good guys. You know, Nick Heron-Webb, a guy that was on The Ultimate Fighter, for example, and I think had at least one UFC fight. Also fought Marcin Rozek, the Polish zombie. But he's got a pretty big step up here in Calvin Kattar, and when you look at the line, Kattar a pretty sizable favorite, but I don't know if he should be. If you know, Fishgold is a tough guy, and his name's been batted around for some time on the regional scene because he's been really good in Cage Warriors. So I think he's going to put up a good fight against Kattar. You know, Kattar is just a tough guy. He's got some good wins under his belt, but coming off a loss against Moicano, and you know, Moicano's nearly in title contention now. But you know, Kattar was able to beat Shane Burgos. Had a really good fight with Andre Feely. So this is a guy that I think can make a lot of noise. But, you know, in terms of the price right now, with Kattar at a 3-1 favorite, I would stay away from that one, unless you're going to go with the underdog in Fishgold, who I think has a lot of talent. The aforementioned Nazareth Hackbarast against Thibaut Gauthier. And it can't be understated how good Hackbarast looked against Mark Diakhazy back in July. So with that in mind, Hackbarast is just riding a ton of momentum. Now, Thibaut Gauthier is a guy that he keeps getting fights in the UFC because he keeps taking these late replacement fights. He was able to get a win over Andrew Holbrook back in September, but then lost a pretty closely contested fight to Sage Northcutt, a fight that a lot of people thought he won. So that, you know, Gauthier has skills. He definitely has skills. But when you look at a guy like Hackbarast, there's a reason why he's such a big favorite. You look at what he has been able to do training out of TriStar, just getting better and better every fight, and looking like a guy who really could have a really, really strong future in the UFC. So there's a reason why he's such a big favorite. I mean, I don't know if he deserves to be such a big favorite, because this is going to be a close fight. I think Gauthier actually, you know, does have a lot of skill. But if Gauthier was up against Mark Diakhazy, Diakhazy would be a very strong favorite, I think, in that fight. So this is actually a step down in competition for Hackbarast. And I think that's why he's such a big favorite. You know, it'd be odd if he's if he beats a guy like Diakite so decidedly and then loses to a guy like Gutierrez. It's MMA math, sort of. I mean, there's always matchups and different strengths and weaknesses, but I think that that's kind of the thought process as to why so much steam has come in on this guy and why he's so touted right now in this spot. Nordim Taleb against Sean Strickland. Now, Sean Strickland's one of these guys that was considered kind of a super prospect, but hasn't really panned out. He got knocked out by Zaleski Dos Santos recently. Very, very close fight with Court McGee, who's on the card, this Moncton card. And got pretty much beaten up by Kamaru Usman. So all of the kind of momentum that he's had is starting to go by the wayside. But that being said, I think he still is a step ahead of Nordin Taleb. Taleb coming off a tough loss to Claudio Da Silva. He was a big favorite in that fight, Taleb, and he managed to lose that one. So he's lost a little bit of his momentum. And he looks to get it back here when he fights Strickland. But I think Strickland's just a better fighter. I think he's the more well-rounded fighter. But, you know, Taleb has such heart. You know, this is one of the things about Nordin Taleb you can't understate. Is if he comes into a fight and he's kind of in it, he's focused, he can beat just about anybody. He's just a tough, tough guy. And Strickland, we've seen in spots where he gets frustrated and it doesn't look like he has it that night. So this could be one of those ones where it goes on feel. To see which guy is a little bit more determined heading into the fight. But I think in terms of a skill set, in terms of who the more well-rounded fighter is, I think it's Strickland. So I think that in a, you know, when you're looking at an even money situation, you want to go with that side. Alex Garcia against Court McGee. Garcia's one of these guys where he can put his foot on the gas pedal and look really good in fights. You know, we saw how he looked against Muslim Salikov, and then you saw how he looked against Ryan LaFlair. So this is a guy that I think is a really tough fighter. But Court McGee, he's one of these guys where he can just put such volume on people in a fight, where he outstrikes his opponent sometimes 2-1, 3-1, and gets the judge's scorecard. You know, gets to the judge's scorecard and he ends up winning. I think this could be one of those situations because Garcia's just not a very big volume guy, whereas McGee puts a ton of volume on different fighters. Now, if Garcia's able to get McGee to the ground and keep him there, that's definitely a path to victory for him. But McGee's also not an easy guy to take down. So I actually kind of lean Court McGee in this spot. Court McGee, a decent-sized underdog in this spot. So that's the side that I like in that particular fight. Now you got Gian Vellante against Ed Herman. Ed Herman's still somehow hanging around the UFC. Now Gian Vellante, I think, is just a much better fighter in this spot. I think he can win on the feet, you know, via knockout. He can take him down and frustrate him that way. But I just think Vellante at this stage is just a far better fighter than Ed Herman. Ed Herman has not looked good over the last couple of years in the UFC. He's been hit or miss, but mostly miss. So I like Gian Vellante there. Andre Sukumtat against the newcomer, Jonathan Martinez, who was training for another fight. So this is a short notice assignment for him. However, he was in camp for a fight around this time. So he's going to have a full camp behind him. And I think that's why Sukumtat is just not that big of a favorite. I have to watch a little bit more tape on Martinez before I can make a very, very strong, you know, give you kind of a strong opinion on this one. So I'm just going to stay away from it just because I don't want to, you know, pretend that I know what I'm talking about with Jonathan Martinez. You know, usually I get a chance to watch some tape, but as I mentioned earlier in the show, I've been a little bit preoccupied with other matters, so to speak. Misha Cirkunov making his return after suffering back-to-back losses to the main eventer, Volkan Uzdemir, as well as Glover Teixeira. He's moved to Vegas. He's in a brand new camp. You know, everybody, the knock on Misha was always, you know, this guy should move camps. He's not training with the best guys. And I spoke to Misha about this. I was over in Vegas for UFC 229 and got to sit down with Misha. You can check that interview out on tsn.ca/UFC. It's a long interview, about 18 minutes long. And he showed me a UFO sighting that he had with video. So that's something you might want to check out. You can see the video that Misha Cirkunov shot from his patio of a UFO. So if that doesn't sell you on the interview, then I don't know what else will. But Misha was telling me in that interview that everybody was right. He should have gone and trained at a better camp. And his explanation was, you know, he was undefeated when he got to the UFC, you know, within the UFC before he fought Uzdemir. He was beating guys pretty easily. So it was one of those, if it ain't broke, don't fix it situations. And then when he lost to Uzdemir, he said it was pretty much like a quick flash knockout. It was 18 seconds or something along those lines. So his thought process was, yeah, maybe it was a fluke. Then he goes in against Glover. Gets beaten on the bottom by a better wrestler, gets submitted. And he realized then that people were right. He should have gone to a better camp, and now he's moved out to Vegas. That's his home base now. He's training under Ray Sefo. He's got a bunch of great training partners and great coaches. So this could be a different Misha Sirkunov. Now, the issue here is Patrick Cummins is a great wrestler. Great wrestler. Now, Sirkunov has a great judo background, so he might be able to stifle that wrestling attack. But when you talk about Pat Cummins, all it takes is, you know, Cummins getting on top of you for half a round or 3 minutes of a round, and you lose that round. So this could be Cummins' this could be a spot where Cummins succeeds, but I just think Misha has more tools. I think he's better on the feet. I think he's got a better submission game. I think his judo background is going to be able to stifle the takedowns of Cummins, although Cummins is a pretty elite grappler, pretty elite wrestler. So that's the part of it that kind of scares me off of this one at such a big number. I mean, Sirkunov is a 5-1 favorite. Co-main event, Michael Johnson against Artem Lobov. Now, this might surprise you. I actually think that Lobov is in a good spot here against a big name. You know, we saw how Lobov performed against Cub Swanson, and he lost that fight, five-round fight, but he was always in it. You know, Cub was hurting him a little bit, but Lobov was in it. You're talking about a guy who used to fight at 155 in Michael Johnson, who's taking a short-notice fight, a weight class down at 145, where he has a couple fights under his belt. But, you know, Johnson has a lot of power, but Lobov's not an easy guy to finish. Never has been. So with a full camp for Lobov against a guy like Johnson, took this fight on short notice, Lobov could outpoint him. This is a 3-round fight. A fight that I think is going to be contested mostly on the feet. And a fight that I think Lobov, as a 5-1 underdog, can have some success in. Given the short notice, given the weight cut for Johnson, you just never know. Because this is Lobov's one of these guys that's not an easy guy to finish and is never really out of fights. So take a look at Artem Lobov in this fight. I don't know why, I just have a feeling that this could be a good spot for him and a good matchup for him. Main event, Volkan Oezdemir against Anthony Smith. Now, the logic says that Oezdemir is going to be able to beat Smith because Oezdemir is a natural light heavyweight, used to fight at heavyweight, whereas Smith is moving up from middleweight. Now, I don't necessarily buy into that. I think that Anthony Smith is a tough, tough guy who looked great at light heavyweight. He told me personally that he thinks that a lot of his career was wasted by the weight cut down to middleweight. He was always a big guy. He was really big for middleweight, and he thought that he would use that to his advantage, but the weight cut really drained him. Now at light heavyweight, he's a really big light heavyweight. He's not going to be as thick as Oezdemir, but he's going to be a lot longer. And this really is a fight that I think could go either way. It's weird because with Oezdemir, we haven't seen a ton. We saw him get beaten up by Cormier, and Cormier would do that to just about any other light heavyweight save for Jon Jones. And then you saw those two quick knockouts that Oezdemir had. And then you saw the kind of back-and-forth fight he had with Ovin St. Preux. So, you know, this is a fight where you're talking about guys that have had really quick finishes facing off against each other. So the chance of this going the distance is virtually nil. Somebody's going to get knocked out. Somebody's going to get finished. And I think if you had to go with one of the two, Oezdemir has the better chance of doing it. But then again, we haven't seen much of a sample size of Anthony Smith at light heavyweight. He's just been stopping these old dudes. He stopped Shogun early on, stopped Rashad Evans. So now against a guy like Oezdemir, you might be able to get a better sample size of Anthony Smith. This is just one of those ones you want to kind of stay away from. Watch how Anthony Smith does and go from there. So that's it for the breakdown of UFC Fight Night in Moncton. Robin Black will be covering it for us on SportsCenter. Robin Black also heading down to New York to cover UFC 230 for us in my absence. I can't really travel right now due to having a baby in the NICU, which people should probably be able to understand. This has been a trying week for my wife and I, and we're getting through it. And again, I appreciate everybody's support. But let's get down to our first interview. We've got on this Moncton card the aforementioned Arjun Buller, the best Canadian heavyweight, I think, in the world right now, given his background in wrestling, and coming off a very tough loss against Adam Vizorica by Oma Plata, which is kind of embarrassing, really. You know, I think he knows what he did wrong, and that's one of those ones where you never want to get caught in a submission like that. But at heavyweight, anything can happen. You know, guys get knocked out quickly, guys can get submitted if they don't know, have a lot of experience with certain submissions. So that's what happened to Arjun, and he's coming back stronger, at least according to him, as he tells me in this interview. He joins us now on the TSN MMA show. I'm joined now on the TSN MMA show by the top heavyweight in Canada,
Arjun Buller, coming off a loss, unfortunately, but looking to rebound at UFC Fight Night in Moncton. So, Arjun, as I mentioned, coming off a loss to Adam Wasorek, a very, very tough loss for you as you were fighting on a Sikh holiday and looking for a big win there. What did you learn from that outing?
It was a mental lapse. You have to respect your opponent at all times while you're in battle. And it was going so well. I got too comfortable and I didn't respect the submission he was going for until it was too late. And basically I got to stay on it from bell to bell. And I have learned that lesson, and there's no harder way to learn that lesson than, like you said, it was a big Sikh holiday. We had great momentum heading into that fight and during that fight. So I will make sure that never happens again.
And now you've got an opponent in Marcelo Gomes who fought earlier this year, lost to a guy who's not the wrestler you are. You know, Timothy Johnson's obviously a fantastic grappler, but in terms of wrestling pedigree, you're well ahead of him. Do you see a pretty clear path for this one?
I do. I see a clear path in all aspects. He does not like getting hit. He shells up. He, doesn't like it when you put him on his back foot. And obviously the grappling, he doesn't like that aspect of it. He's uncomfortable with that pace and that style of a fight. And he concedes. He conceded to Tim. Tim didn't do anything special. He just made it dirty. He stayed in his face. He backed him up. Marcelo really just melted. He conceded that. So, no disrespect to Tim, but I feel I'm able to bring a lot more to the cage in terms of my stand-up, in terms of grappling, in terms of my ability to make it uncomfortable. So I'm excited to showcase all those things.
What's this camp been like for you? I know you bounced kind of back and forth between AKA and British Columbia, but you've got a little one at home, a girl 7 months old. Have you been spending a lot more time at home for this camp than you normally would, or have you been bouncing around?
No, business as usual. I did the first month down in AKA and then finished up the last few weeks here back at home. It's one of those things. I need to do what I need to do because of her. She's an added motivation, and my wife's very supportive of that. We're on the same page of what we need to do to get victories and have success in this. So, like I said, it's been perfect and exactly what I needed for preparation.
I spoke at UFC 229 with Scott Holtzman, who has a five-month-old of his own at home, and he was really getting emotional with the fact that he had to be away from him for a lot of the camp and seeing him grow. He had to be on FaceTime and things like that. How tough was that month away? And what was it like seeing your daughter when you got back? How much? I mean, babies from month to month change dramatically.
They do, man. They do. I feel for him, and I can relate to that. It was tough. But, like I said, this is the life I've chosen. I have every choice. If I don't want to do it, I can walk away at any time. I'm not one of those guys that needs to do this. I have many different avenues and options to available. But I do it, because of her and because of many other reasons. So I just try to remind myself of that, of the sacrifice. Not everyone can do that. And that's why not everyone can be a champion. And I hope that, she grows to understand what I had to do and to appreciate that her dad sacrificed for her and for his success and what that means. And she can take something for that for her life as she grows.
Well, it's an interesting time right now for your camp at AKA. We saw what happened with Khabib at UFC 229. Personally, I've said this before, I thought it was a pretty embarrassing moment for the sport. I also thought that what Conor did in Brooklyn was very embarrassing for the sport. I think that we're starting to move past it a little bit as a community. It's still the last event that we've had in the UFC. What were your thoughts on what happened down in Vegas for 229 in the aftermath of the main event?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All of that shouldn't have happened. We're athletes. We've got a platform, and people look up to us. And it's equally as easy and much better if you push a positive image, and make a positive impact, especially at the younger kids and stuff that look up to us. You don't want to project that stereotype of being a thug and doing that type of stuff. But that would be ideal. But in the real world, emotions, get hot and things become personal. New York should never have happened. Conor jumping in the Bellator cage should never have happened. You know, throwing bottles at the Diaz press conference should never have happened. Many things shouldn't have happened. He shouldn't have touched on, you know, when you come from the East, your belief system, your family, these are things you don't touch on. And he knew what he was doing, touching on those things, pushing alcohol, you know, that type of stuff. He did his homework. He knew what buttons he had to push. And basically there was nothing else left, for him not to push. He had crossed every line he could. So I can understand, you know, Conor's approach, because that's what he likes to do, and it's worked for him. But I can also understand Khabib's response in that. He's been very respectful, you know, with all his other opponents and every other fight. And this time, I guess it was very personal for him, and he lost his cool, which was unfortunate. But I understand all of it.
And while we're on the topic of AKA the champ. Back in action in a couple of weeks, taking a very short notice fight against Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
A, do you think Lewis should be getting in there that soon after taking 120 strikes to the head? And B, yeah. Daniel saying that his hand isn't fully healed. Obviously, the UFC needs a main event for New York, but what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
I think the main event from the get-go should have been Poirier Diaz. I think they've earned that. I think they could have carried the card. You know, I think that was the fight to make. Obviously, you know, Poirier now is injured. And, you know, and that's not working, but that's what my initial thoughts on New York was. And in terms of the quick turnaround, you know, obviously, you know, DC's had his issues with his hand. Obviously he sees a clear path to victory with Derek Lewis's, inability to stop the takedown and his, let's say, you know, shallow gas tank. And, you know, Lewis, like you said, you know, he just had a tough fight. We took some damage. He got hurt with almost every strike to the body, to the head. He was turtled up several times in that fight. But, you know, like many other things in life, sometimes money is able to convince individuals. I mean, Lewis had walked away. He had retired at one point in his career saying, I'm done, but then couldn't turn the money away. So you know what the motivating factor here is, and you know who I'm pulling for. And I'll just leave it at that.
I mean, the odds are so long right now in DC's favor. Do you think that there's anywhere, you know, short of a puncher's chance that Lewis is able to win this fight?
No, that is his chance. He knows that. DC knows that. Everyone that's going to tune in knows that. And, you know, in the heavyweight weight class, anything can always happen. You know, that, you know, with guys like Lewis's size. And that's how he's won his fights. And when he's not, hasn't been able to land, he's always lost. So, and DC's faced that many times before. So, you know, he knows what he has to do. And every time a guy has a puncher's chance against DC, they've always lost. So I like his chances. Get into New York, you know, make that money, defend your title, and then let's go into the new year against Lesnar.
Now, you're usually very media savvy. You do a lot of press and a lot of things to talk about your Sikh heritage. I've noticed that for this fight, you haven't been doing as much. Is the reason for that that, you know, the fight, you want that to be pretty much the sole focus going in?
For sure. The last fight was unique because it was on Vaisakhi, on our holiday. And so you couldn't pass that up, the significance of that, the significance of being allowed to wear my turban and represent my heritage walking out to the cage. All that was lined up. The one previous to that, you know, was my debut fight. So, you know, that's what the case was. And, you know, the priority has always been the fights. Unless you win, nothing else matters. And I'm a competitor first and foremost. With that platform, yes, I'd like to speak on these other things. But for this fight, for sure, the priority is the fight, is the performance I'm going to put on. It's going to be spectacular. I'm going to show the difference between a champion and a prospect. And I'm going to bounce back in a major way, and that is what I'm focused on.
Are you good to wear your turban going forward in terms of your walkout?
Yes. You know, it's business as usual on my end, unless they tell me otherwise. You know, I think we've cleared that hurdle, and for sure, that is the case moving forward.
He is Arjun Buller. He will be fighting Marcelo Golm in Moncton. I'll be there next week, full coverage on TSN.ca. I look forward to catching up with you down there, Arjun.
Thank you. I get in Tuesday night, and safe travels. I'll see you next week.
That was Arjun Buller, and from one heavyweight to another, Juan Adams. This is a guy you got to watch out for. He was on the Dana White Contender Series, and he is just a massive human being. Massive, massive human being. And if you watch him on that particular episode of the Dana White Contender Series, he was excellent. Only 26 years of age, 6'5", 81-inch reach, cuts down to 265, walks around in like the 290 range. It's just a massive human being with a wrestling background, a very athletic guy. And, you know, Chris De La Roca has taken on the assignment December 15th in Milwaukee, last Fox card. This is going to be a guy you're going to keep your eye on because I think he's going to give his fellow heavyweights fits. You saw what he did to Sean Teade, who was 5-1 going into that fight on the Contender Series. This is just a big, big man who I think is going to be a very feared individual in the UFC and a guy that not a lot of people are going to line up to fight. So let's catch up with Juan Adams as he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
All right, the UFC is releasing the Kraken finally after earning a berth in the UFC following the Dana White Contender Series. Juan Adams will make his debut, the last ever Fox card, December the 15th in Milwaukee against Chris De La Roca. You know, I called you, you picked up and you said, "Hey man, how's it going?" As if we're longtime friends. I like that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I know the people of Canada have a reputation for being much friendlier than us in the U.S., so we're going to change that a little bit.
Well, I like that reputation. But you know what? You've got the southern the southern hospitality from Houston.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, obviously, Chris De La Roca, this is your type of fight. This is another big man in the heavyweight division who likes to throw. He's coming off of a win, and you're looking to steal that momentum. Do you think this is the kind of matchup that you're after? I know he was a guy you named a couple of months back.
Yeah, and obviously I named him because I thought it was a fight we could easily get and definitely manageable. I mean, I'm not worried about anything he's going to do. He tends to, from what I've heard, I don't watch film with my opponents, my coaches do, but they say he likes to capitalize on his size advantage, and he doesn't have one with me. So
you have an interesting
playing out really well.
You have an interesting reason for not watching film. Take us through that.
Yeah, so basically, at the end of the day, I'm a very nice person. So when I watch film with my opponents, it makes me humanize them a little bit too much, and then I feel bad for what I'm about to do to them. So I don't like watching film with them.
So how do you dehumanize them in the moment? When you're at the weigh-ins, you're face-to-face with them, then you go into the fight?
Well, as many people know, I have to cut weight. And so I view them as the source of most of my problems for cutting weight. And I want to be known as one of the best to ever do this. So I see them as an obstacle in there. I don't think of them as a person. So I just want to do whatever it takes to break them down and solidify myself as the superior that day.
And you cut quite a bit of weight to get down to the 266-pound threshold, correct?
Yes, sir.
How much do you cut?
Currently 294.
So you're going to be cutting around 30 pounds going into this fight.
Can you repeat that real quick?
So you're going to have to cut 30 pounds. Does that come off easy for you?
Not really. I like to get down to about 282 and then do the rest of it as a water cut the last 2 weeks going into the fight. So.
And what sort of background do you have outside of martial arts? Like, how did you get into this, and what sort of athletics were you into as you got older?
Well, I got into martial arts, mixed martial arts, because I wrestled collegiately, and I started wrestling when I was 14. Before that, I played mostly football. My first sport, I've been playing sports as soon as I could walk. I was 3 years old when I started playing soccer. And then from there, it became baseball. And then I did basketball after that. I started playing football until I was about 10. And then and once I hit 12, from 12 all the way through the end of high school, I did swimming, track, football, and what was the other one? Yeah, swimming, track, football. And middle school, I played every sport they offered. And then in high school, I just switched to football, wrestling, and track because I wasn't going to be good enough to make A team for basketball. So switched over to wrestling, and the rest is history.
At what age were you bigger than everybody? Was it always, like, basically throughout high school?
No, I was always the biggest kid in my class up until I got to elementary school. We had a couple of guys that were 6 foot. Elementary school, I went middle school, I was 5'6" when I was 12, and then when I was 14, I was like 5'9". I started my freshman year of high school at 5'9", 160. After football season, I was about 5'10", 185. And then I noticed that I was wrestling and I was just getting harder and harder to make weight. And when we went back out for spring football, I was 6'3", 230. So,
jeez. So that's like one summer, basically?
Yeah. Over the span of about 4 months, I grew 6 inches. It was pretty crazy.
It's like the story of another Texas native, Chris Bosh, used to play point guard. And then one summer, he just grew like almost a foot.
Yeah, that's how it goes down.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Wow. So how did you adjust to being that size? Was there like a learning curve to being big, essentially?
Yeah. The worst part was like, I remember I would wake up in the middle of the night just screaming because my muscles would be in so much pain. And I lost a lot of flexibility. Gymnastics was the first sport I did for a school. And I was first grade to fifth grade, I was on the gymnastics team. And I just kept growing, so it didn't go well for me. But I lost a lot of flexibility. And obviously, I was clumsy for a little bit and not really like super athletic for a while because I was just adjusting to that new size. A lot of the weight that I put on initially was like just fat and blubber and all that. So as I continued to start working out, I really started hitting the weight. When I was about 16 is when I really started, lifting really, really hard. And that kind of work ethic kind of drove me all the way through high school and college. And when I was wrestling in college, I took my weightlifting regimen very seriously. And that's when I gained, that's when I really saw a change in my body. And then once I started with my current strength and conditioning coach, my current strength and conditioning coach, he really took it to the next level, musculature-wise. And we work a lot of movement, and I have a mobility guy that makes sure I stay healthy and flexible and everything. So that's how I've adjusted, just getting more coaches to really show me the way.
You're managed by a man named Rick Guerrero. He's one of the nicest guys in the MMA space. I'm a big fan of his. He also manages Curtis Blaydes, an individual that you trained with a little bit earlier in your career. Tell us about your time training with Curtis and what you learned from him.
It was a really good time training with Curtis. I learned a lot of, the ins and outs of how the UFC works and how I need to carry myself, how I really needed to compartmentalize my training. At Easton, they don't all train at one place. They go to a lot of different gyms, and I've really brought that back to Easton. I don't train at just one place. I go where I feel each place is best suited for my game. So no, it's huge. And, Curtis, I'm a lot bigger than Curtis. So it's hard for us to like work together sometimes because obviously, he fights often and he's got really high profile fights. So we don't want him getting hurt. And, I'm just so big that's a very real possibility. So we haven't trained together quite as much lately, but we are still pretty good friends, and he definitely taught me a lot about just the ins and outs, how to manage things, how to really look at each fight, and not necessarily at the opponent, but what you need to do to get to the next level.
So are there a lot of big bodies in the gym with you right now as you train for this fight with Chris?
Yeah. We've got a lot of guys coming in. I'm not really overly concerned about the size aspect. I get used to that weight when I'm lifting. My jiu-jitsu coach is a pretty big guy. I've got a couple of guys that are about 265, 270, one 300-pounder that I train with at Paradigm. And then we set up sparring for any, local heavyweights that want to come through and help me get some work in. We set that up about twice a month. So the thing is, I'm so strong already. I'm not concerned about De La Rocha's size or anything. He weighs like 250. I've been lifting heavier than that since I was 15, so I'm not super concerned about it.
Yeah, in his last fight, he showed a lot of resilience. I mean, that was a tough fight between two heavyweights. I don't think you've been. Have you been out of the first round ever? I don't think so. Even as an amateur, you were twice. But
they were 3-minute rounds. So
yes, yeah, is cardio something that you've been working on?
Yeah, you know, I'm in better shape than anyone in the heavyweight division. Period. I'm a better athlete than anyone in the heavyweight division, so that doesn't really bother me. In his last fight, it was tough, but it was against Rashad Coulter, who walks around at like 230. He's really a middleweight. He shouldn't even be fighting at heavyweight. So I don't look at that as a true testament of a chin or grit or anything. He fought a tiny guy, and this time he's going to be the tiny guy, so I'm not concerned about it.
As will your subsequent opponents.
As who?
As will basically any opponent that you fight from here on out. They'll be the smaller man.
Yeah, they're all small. You know, that's why we made the hashtag. You know, I fight little guys. All these guys are little guys to me. I don't really feel threatened by the size aspect. I'm not concerned about anyone being able to push me around or that lazy style where you just kind of push someone up against the cage and throw haymakers. I'm too agile for that. I move too much for that, and I'm too much of an athlete for that to work.
So your Twitter page says you're an avid fan of sci-fi and fantasy. What kind of stuff do you do in your spare time to embrace that side of your personality?
I read a lot of R.A. Salvatore books. I've really been following the Drizzt Do'Urden saga. I was a huge fan of the Star Wars fan fiction novels until they decanonized all the ones I really like. So I do watch every Star Wars movie when it comes out. I watch every Marvel movie when it comes out. Piers Anthony, I used to read a lot of. Just little stuff like that. I read comics. I watch a lot of. I watch certain animes a lot, and that's all the type of stuff I watch on Netflix. It's just kind of quest series. I watch a lot of Merlin. I just started getting really into the Shannara Chronicles, stuff like that. You know, elves, dragons, all that good stuff.
Now we're going to get real for a second. I need you to be perfectly honest with me here. Have you ever written your own fan fiction?
No, I have never. I do a lot of creative writing on, some of my Facebook and stuff, and a lot of the little captions I put on my Instagram. I write a little bit there, but I've never sat down and written an entire fan fiction. The closest thing to that would be in fifth grade, you know, these girls were drawing cartoons of people, so I wrote a script where they all called each other some very dirty names. That was my little revenge, but I got admonished pretty badly for that.
So but you were in fifth. Shied me away. You were in fifth grade, so that
yeah,
makes sense.
And I wrote a play, but it was a very bad. Very bad play, very crass humor in there, and I got in a lot of trouble for it. So since then, I've kind of toned it down a little bit. I leave it to a long Facebook post every now and then where I write about my experiences on airlines or little things that upset me. I kind of use it as a creative outlet.
You don't still have that play, do you, from fifth grade?
Oh, no. My mom ripped that one up. I got in a lot of trouble with that one.
That's too bad. That would have been a good piece of memorabilia for when, you know, you end up being heavyweight champion one day.
Oh, yeah, it's more like blackmail material.
Well, we'll just leave it at that then.
Yeah.
All right, Juan. Well, it's great catching up with you. I think the biggest issue you're going to have going forward is getting people to accept fights with you. You're going to be a lot larger than most of the people in the heavyweight division. You've got a crazy athletic background. So I wish you luck in that regard, and obviously wish you luck for your upcoming fight in Milwaukee.
Thank you so much.
That was Juan Adams, the Kraken. The guy's got a good sense of humor. I like this guy. I think he's going places in the UFC. With that kind of background, big athletic background, big guy, 6'5", will always be at 265 when he weighs in, maybe 266. This is going to be a fearsome individual. So thanks to everybody for tuning in. This is kind of an interesting circumstance, given what's going on in my personal life. And again, I appreciate everybody for their support and the kind words that people have been sending via social media. I'm happy to be able to get this podcast done, despite what's going on. So thank you to all those who listened. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the TSN MMA Show, breaking down UFC 230.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.